Let's go.
You're listening to Making Data Simple, where we make the world of data effortless, relevant, and yes, even fun.
Making Data Simple. It's on. It's on, folks. I just keep talking to interesting people that are set on finding their purpose, life's purpose, making a difference. I just happen to be recording it, so hopefully everybody can take advantage of it. Today is no different. I have Estela Quesada Lerros, and hopefully I did that well. Estela, I took 3 years of Spanish, and I don't remember anything. If Miss Landis is listening out there, I apologize. I apologize because I've not done you a good service. Just haven't used it, so I lost it over time. So it's back to English. I'm sorry about that in advance. But anyway, I'm here with Estela. Let me give you a quick intro, and then I'll turn it over to you to do your own intro. But she works with people committed to their lives and who want to leave a legacy in the world. I love that about her. She's an instructor of MBSR program at Brown University in the USA, which is a mindfulness-based responsible leadership program. She's also trained at the University of Massachusetts. She created her own program, by the way, as well. She is a professional with global companies in the technology sector for more than 14 years as an HR professional. That's brought some of these mindfulness programs. And today she is in Europe. She's in Spain. She's in Madrid, the Europe Skills Build Product Manager for IBM. By the way, she's written a great book. I got to say this before I allow you to jump in, which is The Mindful Response. Today we're going to talk about skills, corporate responsibility, as well as the book on mindful response, because I could certainly use it. And I'd like to hear your intro, your experience. What brings you here today?
Thanks for sharing all that you are sharing in the podcast and for having me here. And what can I say about me? Well, the program that I created that I want to say is called Mindfulness-Based Responsible Leadership. And the program that I am instructor of, that I was certified by the University of Brown, which I started certifying by University of Massachusetts, is Mindfulness-Based Stress Reduction, which is a program that it was created many years ago by scientists on mindfulness, that it has a lot of research and science behind, which it was something for me so important in the moment in which I started practicing mindfulness. And yes, it is something that I'm doing today. I'm working in corporate social responsibility. I work in the program Skills Build, which is an area that I love in corporate social responsibility, which is reducing the skill gap that we have in society. So we are going to a technological society. Sometimes there is a gap between how quickly a technology evolves, and the skills that we have as population or people being able to work in a job environment that is changing every couple of minutes, right? So that's what we are doing in SkillBit. So, and I have the pleasure to be now the project manager for Europe. So I'm working with NPOs, NGOs that are supporting learners to reduce that gap, especially for those vulnerable population that do not have access to those skills that some people like me or you maybe are lucky enough to be able to acquire and to be able to pay for to work, right? And to have a better job and a better opportunity in society. So yeah, that's a little bit about what I do.
Fantastic. And you are in Madrid, is that correct?
I am in Madrid. You got it. It's all...
All right.
And I published the book, The Mindful Response, which is also written in Spanish under the title La Respuesta Consciente, in case we have any Spanish population over there.
So is it the mindful response, or is it, here's the reason I asked this, is because I did translation and it said the conscious response. Is it mindful or conscious?
Is the mindful response, the title in English is the mindful response. And it was funny because that title was given to me somehow while I was meditating. And it came like that, the mindful response. Yeah.
So it wasn't a publisher.
Yeah, I mean, long story short, the idea of the book was there for a long time. And I was asking myself why, right? Why meditating? Why it is important? Why it's important for me? Why it is important for society? That idea was there always in the back of my mind. It was something recurrent coming. And one day while I was meditating, it was very clear to me the answer to this question of the why? Because why? To improve my health. Okay, good. Fair enough. I improved my health, but I'm okay in terms of my health now. So why? So why to behave more ethically? Yes, but why? Why do I want to
like
work?
Five why.
So yeah. Why? So the why was really because I want to be free. And the only way to be free is to choose my response. So it's the mindful response, is the space in which I choose to respond and not to react towards it happen in life. That's where I can be free, because I'm choosing.
Awesome. All right, we're going to make the listeners wait for a little bit of that, because I'd like to dive into that. That gets pretty deep, but I appreciate it. But just to be clear, the mindful response is the book you have. Do you also have a... You're also a founder of the Mindful Response. Is that the book itself, or do you have a...
Yes, it's an organization that delivers mindfulness programs to different entities. So, for example, I have recently delivered programs to, for example, the police in Spain, or I have delivered programs to doctors as well. So I work on responsible leadership programs based on mindfulness. To different source, and that's the purpose of the mindful response, is delivering those techniques and methods that requires that allows leaders to lead in a way in which they are responsible towards themselves, taking care of themselves, plus taking care of whatever they have in their hands to serve society, because every work that we do is to serve someone, right? So the intention is to be able to serve the other while serving ourselves and taking care of ourselves and our well-being.
You've got me even more intrigued, but I'm going to start with skills first. All right. So jumping into skills, or skills build, as you call it, the skills build program manager in IBM Corporate Social Responsibility. Tell me, or tell us, what that's about.
Well, it says Skill Builds is an initiative that it was brought up in order to reduce the gap in society, the skill gap that we have towards technology, right? And also to serve those underserved populations, of that population that is more vulnerable to the quick changes that we have in society. There was an interesting information that it was published in the World Economic Forum. Basically, what they were saying is that most of the new jobs, 50% of the companies estimate that companies estimate that 50% of the employees will need reskilling, and that there is a huge opportunity in the market for those new upcoming jobs. So basically, because there is that talent shortage across all the industries that are somehow not helping innovation, or that are not helping moving in the way in which we could move, that's how skill builds came up. Okay. And the intention to create a skill builds was to reduce that gap and also to foster diversity and inclusion. Nowadays, maybe we don't have to have a university title, right? Maybe we don't have to go to the traditional way of acquiring skills. And there are different ways in which learners can acquire new skills to close that gap that we have. We have to have a way as well to understand, okay, but which are the level of skills this person is acquiring. So SkillBiz is very much about that, about providing a skill to those people. There are three main focus. So there is an area that is focused on students. How do we make sure that students that are going to start choosing soon, what do I want to be? What do I want to do in the future? So start considering some of these new pathways for them to develop their careers. So there is that part of training students and their teachers, because sometimes teachers are not having the skills they need in order to be able to support their learners, their students. So that's one side of skill builds. There is another side that is focused on adults, basically. So skills for jobs, which are those jobs that are more required? Where do we have higher gaps, right? We have a higher gap. There are needs in the market and we are not covering. So how can we support those people to acquire the skills, especially those that are technological, so that we, as IBM, we can help learners to acquire those. And there is...
So is this for students or existing professionals?
So,
or both?
Two sides, both. So there are separate programs depending the profile of the learner. So there is students and teachers, schools somehow, older than 13, 14 years old, right? So when they are starting to decide where do I want to go or what do I want to do in the future. And then there is the adult side that is for people that is older than 18 and that can start working or doing something. So it's for adults, we call adults. And there is a third part on skill builds that is focused more on the academy and those that are working on research. And for those, we offer licenses and to use the IBM technology to support their research and innovation initiatives.
I could probably make a guess that would be pretty close to accurate. But what problem are we trying to solve?
I think the problem we are trying to solve is how can you acquire the skills you need to access to new job opportunities?
So is this for those folks that are not technical at all? Or is the problem, given the change in technology we've seen, and I hate every answer being AI, but is it because of the transformation to AI that we've got to motivate that transition? And is this for the benefit of society, or is it, quite frankly, for IBM, by example, to get more talent or to bring on more talent to help with our technology?
In this area, we are not, I mean, the programs we deliver are programs that are short, specific, focus on vulnerable population. We are not looking for reskilling or finding people for IBM. We are really focused on serving the people. I know it's weird because the first time I said, of course, IBM, the name, just because we are serving these people, IBM names is there, right? And is associated to something that is positive towards society. So there has to be a benefit somehow around that, around the IBM name. But we are not looking to train people to make them IBMers. The intention is to see where do we have a gap. And then we have very different profiles. So sometimes we are working with senior people, let's say, people that I have been working all this time in an area or in a topic that is no longer existing as I was working on it. So I need to reskill myself, otherwise I don't have an opportunity to continue working. So, and that can happen to many different industries. So I sometimes give the example, you can be a person working in corporation on economics, but now you are not going to make decisions in the same way you were doing it before. You will have to understand a little bit on data analytics, for example, because you are going to have to start using the new technologies to make decisions in a different way, for example. Or you can be a person that is a techie, right? I don't think techies are having the best profile for skill builds. Maybe they can, because we deliver programs, for example, on web development, that there are a lot of needs in the market. So you can go and understand a little bit what it means, and you can even create your page. And that's something we are going to help you to understand how to do it. Or Python, for example, we are teaching people on how to use Python. That's an initiative we are launching in Spain. Or we have various programs, but all of them are focused on the needs of the market. And we are not using IBM technology only. Of course, when we talk about data analytics, we talk about IBM technologies, but we talk about other technologies as well. So it is really based on what the market needs. And actually, we are doing partnership with organizations to try to see, okay, those people that are completing specific programs with us, can you help them maybe to find a job or maybe to at least see if they could have an interview with an organization that could require that level of that profile, that type of profile. So that's something we are doing as well.
So this is a pure social investment.
Completely IBN social impact. This is all social impact. And that's why it's corporate social responsibility. And that's why it is prohibit any learner to pay any amount for the programs that we are delivering. It's actually IBM investing on organizations to deliver the content or to facilitate. We have what we call administered cohort or facilitated programs where the learner is going to have someone to go and ask questions. Look, I have been using this platform. I have seen this content online, but I have these questions. And they can drop an email. They can participate in live sessions and ask their questions. And at the end, this is what we call project-based learning. At the end, they are going to present the final project where they are saying, look, it's not only that I took these contents online, but I also learned about this and I implemented a small project to show you that I learned that I learned the basis of these skills. So, and this program is evaluated by our partner organization. They say, yes or no? Yes, you acquired the skill? No. Most of the time it's going to be a yes if there is an effort and there is an interest from the learner to say, look, I didn't know how to do this. Yes, so you can do it this way. So we are not here to add problems to the learner, but to ensure that the learner acquires the skills they want to acquire to be able to use them and help them in the market. And we don't talk enough about it, because sometimes there is a problem that if you talk too much about it, what if at some point in time a program get discontinued? So sometimes there is this challenge. If I talk too much, maybe I'm overselling myself. If I don't
talk
about
it, trying to make money out of it or trying to get benefit from it, yeah.
And if you don't talk at all, then nobody gets to know what is happening. And sometimes IBMers or we ask for volunteers, for example. So sometimes if we are running a program on data analytics, we ask for volunteers. And would you like to come and share with our people and say a day in the life of a data analytics? And they are more than happy to go and share the experience with them and see the faces of these people eager to understand more, you know, how their life could be as well, because this is a first step for them.
But I think there's a balance there. IBM isn't always good at marketing to begin with. I mean, we don't like to tout our stuff. We like to let our talents and our success kind of just resonate by itself. But like I run a charity, I should say my wife runs the charity more so than me. It's here to help KC, by the way. It provides hearing aids for individuals that needs them if you're interested. But I found that you've got to somehow tout it. And the best way to tout it, maybe you alluded to this, in my opinion, or what we found in the charity space, is to let the receiving end, I mean, the individuals that are receiving the hearing aids, talk about how it's changed their life. Mm-hmm. We stay out of it. We just say, hey, if you'd like to talk about it, you'd like to put yourself on YouTube, We'll help you with that, but it's up to you to do so. How do you measure success?
How do we measure? So we have a huge commitment that has been shared as well publicly, which is skilling 30 million of people by 2030. Okay, so that's our commitment, and we have shared it. So we measure the number of people we are able to skill in every year with the different programs that we have in the different regions or countries of the world. That's something that we do. And on the programs, there are different ways to measure. We tend to, at the end of the program, we always ask, send a survey to understand how do they value the contents, the facilitation of the sessions, for example, the trainer. So different elements, that's something that we measure. And we receive feedback from the learners. So, and sometimes when we have live sessions every week or every couple of weeks, and we are facilitating the programs, every time that we have a session, we ask for feedback as well. And we also get ask for feedback from our partner organizations. So we are not working on this alone. We have a team internally in IBM, but we also work with partners.
But what are the primary areas that you're reskilling? You've mentioned Python a few times, which is, depends on which way you look at it, I guess, is, you know, that's, you're getting into AI, et cetera. That's pretty heavy tech. But what would you say is the top three, by example, areas? And then I guess I'll ask a two-part question, which you never do. But what are the top three areas, and how do you determine that? And then how do you deliver effectively? Like, you've got different ages. You've got kids with adults in the same class.
They are separated. Kid and adults, they are students are one place, and students and teachers, and then adults, they are in different places. But still the range is, because it could be from 18 to 60, 70s, 80s. Okay, so it could be whatever age. So we have seven areas of domains. And those seven areas are, so we have data analytics, for example. We have web development, front-end, back-end. Web development is another area of domain. We have IT tech support. We have as well cybersecurity, which this one is a little bit more challenging to implement depending where, right? Because you need to have a level of English, for example, to go to a program on cybersecurity. And if we want to work with underserved populations, sometimes they do not speak English. You are not going to believe it. But yes, there are many people that do not speak English. So then we have these seven domains that are linked to the topics that we know best, maybe in IBM, and also where we see there are opportunities in the job market, especially where there are biggest gap. That's how we choose. And that portfolio of programs that we execute depends very much on the country we are working with and the population we are trying to serve. Sometimes we also deliver programs on professional skills, for example, more focus on soft skills, for example. But the main focus is on technological skills.
Makes sense. But I only got four. You said data and analytics, web dev, IT tech support, cybersecurity, and what were the other two?
We have artificial intelligence, and we also have cloud as well. We are introducing new topics that are sustainability as well, and how sustainability linked to technology. But that's something we are going to have more soon, but for the moment, it is there, and it's going to come.
What's your selection criteria? I mean, how did somebody get into this program? Again, if there is a two-part question, how do you, because this is related, how do you ensure diversity and inclusion?
So we do not select the people, okay? So we go to our NPO partners or governmental organizations, and we share the profiles of people we would like to serve. And then the organization is going to be doing the work to select those profiles that can take advantage of the program. So it's not the selection criteria, it's more we tell you which are the bases you need to have in order to make the best out of the program. And then based on that, we give the learners some specific contents that they can do on their own rhythm with the support of the NPO, or there are different formats. So everybody can access to the platform. That's the first thing. There are so many open contents that are available to everybody. All the people that are listening to us or that are going to listen to us, you can go quickly to skillbuilds.org, and you are going to be able to access to our contents. You can create your profile quickly and access to all the information we have there, and you can take your programs online on your own rhythm, on your own pace, as you want it. But then when we work with NPOs, we don't say you are eligible and you are not, but we admit everybody that is coming. And then sometimes we do have some specific test or some specific learning contents that we offer in order to be able to go to a next step in the training. So, for example, going to Python. I cannot tell anyone jumping to Python straight away, but I need to make sure that everybody has the same level at the beginning. So we are going to offer them certain contents they would need to complete in order to be able to be eligible to the next stages of the training. Okay? But that's how we are working.
But I got to believe if you're going to meet the 30 million by 2030, that you're also are trying to, I don't want to say advertise, but maybe it's advertise some of the programs so you get people to sign up. Because if nobody signs up, you're not going to achieve your objective.
Yeah. So we are promoting as much as we can to have people coming to the platform and to our programs. That for sure. Yeah. So that's, but there are no specific. So we do sometimes with our partner organizations, they do promotions. They do share it and invite people to come and join us to have our cohorts ready as well, because also sometimes, that's something we are doing.
Okay.
But we are not telling anyone you cannot join.
Right. I get that. But you're on pace for that 30 million.
I mean, we are on the path. We are on the path. We are on the path. There is a huge number of effort that we are putting into that. So,
but individuals just can sign up. I mean, I could sign up if I wanted to.
Yeah.
Tell us about your book. I have to say, I am not the best at meditation. I'm not always present, as my wife would tell me. I'm working on it. So this is very intriguing to me. Let's just start with the mindful response. Lessons, stories, practices. Just give us a 2-minute version of what you have there, and then I'll just be selfish in how it can help me, because I can use all the help that I can get. I mean, it's so busy, right? We're doing stuff. You're on and on and on. You're never off. You got the iPhone. I was talking with somebody the other day, and you know, I did live without the iPhone at one point in time. I don't know what we do without them. I mean, I can't imagine, even though I lived a lot of years without the iPhone. I mean, it's just so interrupt driven. So tell me how to be mindful.
Well, first of all, I think that let's be honest and practical here. So why do you think I got interested in mindfulness? And why did I decide to become a mindfulness instructor? Because I was mindful. No. Okay? No. It wasn't the reason, right?
So you were me at one point.
I needed myself. Yes. I saw myself in a position in which it's not that I don't need it now. Let me be clear. So it is now a way of working for me. It's a way of doing things. It's a way of living somehow. But if I became interested about mindfulness, it was because I needed to find better ways to manage the things that it was happening in my life. Look, I was in my day and I was working as a, let me tell you one story. So I was working as a project manager for a global program serving 24 countries. And there was a point in time in which I was waking up very early in the morning because I was starting with the people that were in Asia, in the Philippines and Japan. And then continue with the European projects in the middle of the day, meetings with the UK and the rest. And then later on in the day, I was having my meetings with the executives. So I was there available most of my day. And without noticing, I started getting burned out. Would I have thought that I was burning out? No, I was perfect. It was just, I was a little bit... how can I say? I was a little bit frustrated with things, more angry or anxious about things, but that was okay for me. Maybe it wasn't for my colleagues, I have to say, or maybe for my teams. They could see that I was exploding, but for me, I was okay. But there was a point in time in which I recognized it. I was in front of my computer trying to send an email and not even know where I was, because I was sending the email, replying five chats at the same time and replying a phone call that I was receiving at the same time. So I was trying to do it all together. And when I was in that position, I remember one day just saying, look, I'm going to stop for today because I just wanted to cry or to kill someone. So those were the two options. Or I kill someone or I cry. But
yeah, let's not do the latter. Is it anger, anxiety, frustration? Are those
I didn't know what it was happening, but there was something that it wasn't working in my life. You call it a mix of things because nothing was working incorrectly, but nothing was working well, neither. You know what I mean? So it was a mix of just too much on my table, like nothing, all working, but nothing working is weird. So I remember turning the TV on and putting some of those documentary shows in the TV that I would never have seen before. And when that I turn on the TV, I hear the story of some project manager in IBM. Look, that was curious to me. And they were talking about burnout. And they were giving the example of a lady that was working as a project manager and one day had to travel to somewhere and wasn't able to jump into the into the airplane to go to wherever she wanted to go because she had an anxiety panic attack or anxiety attack. So when I heard that, it was like, what is happening? Tell me more. Let me listen to this. So I heard of the story. They talk also about a story of the police and how they were burned out with, especially those police that were working with people committing suicide or very specific situations where they have to have a period of relapse and to recover from all the difficulties they were having. And they talk about mindfulness. And that was the beginning for me. Because they talk about mindfulness, that I started researching what was that thing of mindfulness, which I didn't know what was it. And then something weird happened, that it was the University of Massachusetts came to Spain, to Madrid, to deliver one training program to the first people they were training on MBSR in Spain. So the mindfulness-based stress reduction program. So I went to that retreat, which I said, okay, look, it's the first time that I'm going to take 1 week, real week of vacation after 8 years working. I decided to take that week, real week, where I was not going to be online and connected.
Yeah.
So I decided, okay, I'm going to go to that retreat and let's see what happens. And then I decided, okay, 5 days has given me a lot of information, but I need to continue working on this. What can I do? Okay, let me go to the university and continue my studies on this to deepen in my practice. And that's how everything started. Because there was something that it didn't felt right in my life. And because I saw that documentary with someone that was experiencing something that I said, look, if I don't change, I may be in that position in the future because I'm not smarter than this lady. So...
In your book, you talk to what tools and actions you can take to be more mindful. I know this is a rhetorical question, but is it working for you and how is it working for you?
It is working for me. Thanks God. I think I am married because I practice mindfulness. I think I'm working now. Yes, otherwise maybe I wouldn't be. And maybe I wouldn't be a mother. Or I wouldn't handle conversations with my little one in the same way that I do it now. Or I'm sure I wouldn't be working in corporate social responsibility. So it really changed my life. I'm passionate with the things I like to do, but I tend to choose my answer. So it works to me. The more we have more things to do, the more I notice I need to stop. So this is a good alarm to me that only mindfulness have given me. And in the book, what I share is what the tools that had helped me and the things that I saw that were working better, especially in a corporate environment. So sometimes when we go for long practices, that doesn't work. So I share, the book is a method, it's the mindfulness-based responsible leadership method somehow, condensated into one book. It's 7 weeks of instructions or practices. Many of them also include journaling in order to understand who I am, who do I want to be.
I understood it to be two parts. You tell me if this is right or wrong. One is the mindfulness practice, but with reflective writing. Can you talk more about that?
Journaling. So sometimes it's journaling and sometimes... So mindfulness practices are short practices to understand how do I attend the breath, how do I notice my body sensations, how can I recognize my emotions, how can I understand how am I talking to me or what is going on, the thoughts that are going on in the mind, right? So that's one important part, which is training attention. And sometimes I like to give this example. So I am at home, sitting down, and then sometimes I go to the window, and once of those days that I go to the window, I see someone riding a horse quickly. The person riding the horse goes quickly by, and he's like, "Ooh, a person riding a horse so quickly. What is happening?" And I'm there 2 minutes ago, and I see the person coming back quickly the other way. So what is going on? The person was quickly going there, riding the horse, coming back, riding the horse, and it's like, I don't know you, but maybe me, because I'm curious, I stay a little bit, let's see if the person with the horse come back over here. So yes, I wait a few seconds and the person is coming the other way around. So I say, look, if the person pass over my window again, I'm going to ask, where are you going? Mm-hmm. And look, you know what happened? The person comes with the horse, the rider goes in front of the window, and I say, where are you going? And what do you think the person answers?
Hey, you crazy?
Crazy? Why are you asking me?
Yeah, quit asking me questions. I don't know.
So the person answers, ask the horse. Okay? That's how many times we live. We go quickly running one place, running to another, but we don't really know where are we running or where are we going ahead towards what, right? Where am I going? I just jump into the horse, which is my mind. My mind is telling me, now you answer this question, now you go there, now you go there. But my attention is not focused. And just jumping from one thing to another thing. And that's what these people...
How do you stop it? Give us a term. I know we're going to run out of time, and I should have spent more time probably on this. But give me a tip, at least something that we could learn in the book that would help. Because, yeah, I think I was burnt out 20 years ago. I don't know what the next stage is, but I'm in that stage. So okay. What's a tip? Does it tie into meditation? I presume you're going to tell me about meditation too. But
meditation is important. So we have mindfulness, formal practices, and informal practices. So you can go into meditation, and when you go into meditation, you are going to notice, okay, maybe I'm paying attention to my breath. And then the mind starts saying, look, this is boring. Stella, stop looking at the breath. You have looked at it already. There is nothing new here. Go and answer your emails. You have a million over there. So that's the internal conversation that is going on in each of us. That's the normal way of thinking. That's the normal way in which the mind works. So what we need to tell the mind is, who is the boss here? I'm telling you, please pay attention to the breath. So only for this time, can you come back and pay attention to the breath? So that's a way. A good way to start is just to say, look, I'm going to put my alarm for 2 minutes and I'm going to do nothing in 2 minutes. Okay? Just do nothing in 2 minutes. And maybe pay attention to what is happening to you. You're going to feel uncomfortable because you are changing a pattern. We are used to do one thing and the next and the other. We are not used to a stop. So that's a way in which you are telling the mind, yes, I know you have to do many things, but if I'm here 2 minutes doing nothing, that should be fine by you. That's a way to practice. There is even a simpler way to practice, or another way to practice, which is pay attention 2 minutes to your breath or to your body sensations. By the way, the breath was there before you stop. So that's something you can do. That's a way to train your mind. And that could call it formal practice, but you can do also an informal practice, which is do only one thing at the same time. If you are washing your dishes or putting the dishes into the washing machine, just do that. Don't do another thing. Don't try to answer the message from someone. Don't try to prepare the food. Just focus on how it is, the experience of putting the dishes into the washing machine or washing the dishes or understanding the water, feeling the water in your hands. That's a way also to train your mind. Changing from multitask to monotask. That's the first tip.
Well, I mean, that's easier said than done, though. I'm with you, especially exactly. with all the different notifications and everything else you get. I used to pride many years ago. I've learned since then. But I used to pride myself on multitasking. I now have a philosophy that there is no such thing as multitasking at all if you want to do something well. So, in fact, I've got a little sticky on my my screen here that says focus. That's meant to remind me that if either schedule the meeting or don't schedule the meeting, if I'm in the meeting, stay in the present moment and focus. So you can get value out of it, drive value, et cetera, or cancel the meeting. It's one of the two. But having said that, it's easier said than done because then you get a call, you see it's somebody that's important that you've been trying to get a hold of, whatever. You just gave us a couple tips. I presume that there's some depth in the book that we would get by reading it.
Yeah, so there are seven weeks of program and 2 weeks that are introductory. So you can go to understand the science. The first part of the book is precisely on more giving information to your mind so that you can trust that what you are doing, it makes sense and it is proved by the science. And then there are very, very many other things that are very practical on writing, on reflective writing. So asking questions that are important that are gonna allow you to create the environment as well that are going to help you to be focused. Because sometimes we don't create that space that is going to facilitate us. So you told me at the beginning of this, we are going to say the secret to the people that are going to listening to us. Put yourself on snooze, so stop the notifications, right? So that nobody's interrupting you while you are here. So that's something we can decide is our response towards interruptions. I can remove all the notifications. I'm removing all the notifications from my mobile, even the pop-ups. I don't want to have any pop-up in my mobile. Why? Because then every time that I take my mobile, I'm going to jump into the notifications. So someone is deciding for me, what do I have to do the first thing that I take my mobile? I don't want anyone to decide. It's going to be me. If I take my mobile, it's because I want to make a call or I want to send a message. And it's going to be me deciding how I'm going to use the mobile. Not the mobile telling me that I need to go to WhatsApp or to whatever, or to Instagram, right? So we can make conscious decisions on how to use our technology, how to use and live a life.
I got you. It seems like you're making the right decisions because I know your child is sick and you're taking care of a sick child today. You still found a way to find the podcast, though. Thank you for being here, Estella. We may have to dig deeper and have you on again to more about the mindfulness because while I know some of the practices, I often, if I'm admitting, I don't always take the time to do the practice. Yeah, sometimes I feel like I'm answering questions, important questions, too quickly when I need to pause and take the time out to get it done right. I was reading a book, like I think it was Champions or whatever. I can't remember. You know, the greatest athletes, the greatest business individuals, entrepreneurs, etc., they tend to focus. They find a way to focus and they find a way to say no. Very difficult, but that's what can often differentiate excellence from mediocrity. Anyway, thank you for being here. I'd love to have you longer. Maybe we'll get you back on if you're up to it so we can talk more about
mindfulness. Yes, let's stay in touch. And first of all, I want to say thank you to you. And I think just by recognizing that our minds wanders, and that's the normal way in which mind works, right? That we are not less because of that. We also need to learn how to be kind to ourselves. And that's something that is in the book as well. So that's a path. We are learning and we are not perfect and we are not looking to be perfect. We are just trying to increase or improve every step up a time. Only that. So congratulations on your path and congratulations to everyone on the path that is taking towards growing.
1% better every day. I got it.
Yeah.
Podcast listeners, thank you for listening. Hit us on lmartintalksdata@gmail.com. Love to hear from you. Talk to you next time.